have any people. They don't have the all internal. So you have a term
I assume that the equations are linear, right? So
okay, also have some term for both of justify.
Justify where in?
I mean the
in which equation? In the Lagrangian?
Yeah, they say it's the only way.
That wouldn't matter at all. So as a home exercise, you can check that if you add a linear term to the Lagrangian, you can actually eliminate it by redefining the field. By shifting it by a constant. That's a simple exercise. Let me not do it right now. So let me return to the conservation laws. Okay, so the goal will be to understand. So suppose we look at this action for the Klein-Gordon field or the Klein-Gordon equation. How do we know that the energy of the Klein-Gordon field is conserved? So we went through the derivation of the Hamiltonian, and we know that there is a conserved energy, but can we see it just from the Lagrangian? The answer is yes. There is a very powerful theorem that relates conservation laws to symmetries. In fact, that I think notions of symmetries and conservation laws somehow in from our sort of everyday intuition they are very different. But in physics there is no these are manifestations of one and the same thing, and so there is no clear physical distinction. So anyway, there is a theorem called Noether theorem. That relates the two. So the theorem is formulated in the following way. Suppose that we have some Lagrangian that we can integrate over space and then over space-time, and we then get an action. And we'll consider a generic case where we have some number of fields phi I, and the Lagrangian will be a function of these fields and their derivatives. And the only assumption that we make is that this function is local, so that the action is an integral over the local Lagrangian density. So by the way, in field theory, usually usually people call the Lagrangian this density. So it's because one almost never uses the Lagrangian itself, which is a three-dimensional integral, but this is much more important quantity. Yes?
What do you mean specifically when you say that it's local?
It depends on fields and derivatives at one particular point. So this can be written as a single integral. Like here, the Lagrangian density is a function of phi of x and the derivative of phi, but at the same point. Well, for instance, I don't know, d for x, d for y, y squared of x, y squared of y. That would be an unlocal quantity. Some u of x minus y. This we encountered in non-relativistic second quantization, so we will not consider those types of Lagrangians. We only consider Lagrangians that are written as a single integral. So equations of motion follow from the variation of the Lagrangian, and then they have the following form. So now we assume that these equations are satisfied. So then the theorem states that if the action has certain symmetries, then there will be as many conserved currents that will be that will have zero divergence, provided that the field satisfies the equations of motion. So, how do we formulate mathematically that the Lagrangian has a symmetry? Well, the symmetry is something that changes our fields and maybe coordinates, but doesn't change the action. So, a symmetry. Is in general, it will be a transformation of x mu and of phi I that leaves the action invariant. So the symmetries, this means that so symmetries that are important for the Noether theorem are continuous symmetries. So there should be some parameter in the symmetry transformation. For instance, if you do a Lorentz transformation, there is a parameter in it. So for instance, we can make a Lorentz boost with velocity v, and v can be anything between 0 and 1. Or we can do rotation in space through an arbitrary angle. And so angle will be a parameter. This is something that has a finite range of variation. So the theorem is formulated in terms of infinitesimal transformations. And these are those where we just linearize in the parameter. So we assume that the transformation parameter is small, and we take only linear part of the variation. Like we make a, say, rotation through a very small angle. So under such infinitesimal transformations, the coordinates and the fields will transform, so if you take the parameter to be small, then the change will be small. And so this small increment in coordinates and in the fields this is just a notation, so we introduce some notations for for infinitesimal variations of the fields and coordinates under the symmetry transformations. So epsilon A are parameters, so they are infinitesimal. Transformations. So index A enumerates all possible transformations that are allowed. So we may assume that our action has n symmetries. And then thetas are, in general, functions of x. So we have n four vectors that are called Killing vectors. So by the way, Killing is a second name of a German mathematician. That doesn't have anything to do with the English verb. then L A are some differential operators. That are called generators. So then the statement of the Noether theorem is the following. So then Noether theorem states that the system will possess n conserved charges and conserved quantities. Where the associated currents are can be written in terms of the transformation parameters in a pretty explicit form. So here I assume some repeated summation over all indices that appear twice, plus theta mu A times the Lagrangian density. So the theorem states that if phi I satisfy the equations of motion, then these currents are conserved. So maybe let me. So in particular, one of the consequences of this would be the conservation of the total charge. So we can define charges QA as integrals over the whole space of the zero components of currents. So the zero component of the current is the charge density. So if you integrate it over the whole space, which has no boundary, so there will be no boundary influx, and this would mean that this current is conserved. So the total charge will be then a conserved quantity. So I think that the Noether theorem is totally counterintuitive. When I first saw it, it was just absolutely unclear why it should be correct. Yes?
Sorry, you said that we sum over the field indices I?
Yes. Yes. So in general, phis can be vectors. There can be several fields. We need to sum over all possible fields. So anyway, this statement is not really might not be clear why is it true. And moreover, the proof is not really illuminating. By going through the proof, you wouldn't gain much. So I will not do it. I will not prove this theorem here. If you wish, you can look for the proof in the textbook or in the notes. Let me just give some examples, just to see what all these quantities are and how one can find them when we have some particular Lagrange. So as a first example, let's consider translational symmetry. Well, this is something very universal. So any meaningful field theory should be translationally invariant. So the action should not explicitly depend on any position in space and in the moment of time. So this should be a very, very general property of field theories. So let us see what we mean by the symmetry. Well, what we mean is that let's also consider this case of the Klein-Gordon field. So this will be true for any field theory, but just as an example, we'll consider the Klein-Gordon field. So this symmetry tells us that if we shift the field by the field argument by any constant, then the action will not change. Okay, so this is pretty obvious from any consideration starting from common sense, and then you can just check it in the Lagrange, right? So by changing variables and the integral, we bring it back to the same form. Okay, so it enjoys this symmetry. Now to apply the theorem, we need to write it in the infinitesimal form. So in the writing it in the infinitesimal form means that we take A to be epsilon and then linearizing in this variable. So then X obviously so let's take A mu to be minus epsilon mu. For some reasons, what let me see. We take A to be plus epsilon. So what I claim is that delta x is equal to minus epsilon mu. And delta phi is equal to epsilon mu d mu phi. So these are the infinitesimal form of Lorentz transformations. Yes?
I claim that delta x mu equals negative epsilon mu. So why should we buy that?
Okay. So what we do is we say shift our spacetime by a step minus epsilon. Okay? So if you look at one particular point, then this point will move to the right, and epsilon is move to the left. Epsilon is negative. Epsilon is positive. So delta x is negative. So everything moves, say, to the negative to the left. Okay? So if you look at some point in space, then the field doesn't change. Okay, but its coordinate system has moved. So you have coordinates like that. These were the old ones, and then the new ones will be shifted by epsilon, right? Now, this is the point where we sit, and we measure the value of the field here. Okay? So now, in the old coordinates, this distance was x, okay? But now we added, so in the new coordinates, the argument of phi would be x plus epsilon, right? So in other words, what we did is we shifted the coordinate system to the left, but this means that we shift the argument of the x to the right. I don't know if I explain this in a comprehensible way. Maybe with some more examples it will become more clear. But it's the idea is that we make a small change in coordinates and fields such that the action remains invariant. So in other words, what we have, probably this line might be confusing. So the transformation, let me write this transformation in a very precise way. So we do two changes. So we say that phi of x goes to phi of x plus a, and x goes to x minus a. Okay. Since the only dependence on x is inside the argument of phi, what happens is that we shift the argument of phi by a, but then we shift a, x by minus a, and these two shifts compensate one another. Okay, then we take an infinitesimal form of these transformations, and it is just this one. So we expand take A to be very small, and then expand this equation to the linear rotor. OK, then we should apply the Noether theorem. So you see our parameter has four components. So epsilon carries a Lorentz index. Now, this mu is the same as A over there. Let's see. We should write this bring this equation into the form written on the upper blackboard. So we should figure out what is theta mu and then instead of A, we write another Lorentz index, because now this index that enumerates transformations is the same as the space-time index. And so to relate the upper equation with this equation, we should just set the Killing vector to be delta min, minus delta min. Now the generator, so it also has an A index. The generator is just the derivative. So this is the Killing vector, this is the generator. And then we just apply the formulas from the theorem. What do we get? So let's call our conserved quantity T. So this T is the same as J in the theorem. So it has an upper index mu. That is the index of the vector index of the four current. And then the lower index, that is also the Lorentz index in this particular example, that enumerates all possible generators. Okay. So it has two Lorentz indices. And then, okay, so we should take the derivative of the Lagrangian density with respect to the derivative of the field. So that gives us the derivative of the field. So this would be d mu phi, right? Then multiply by the generator acting on the field. This gives d nu phi. Then we should add the Killing vector multiplied by the Lagrangian. So this gives minus delta mu nu times the Lagrangian. So the claim is that this charge is conserved. That for any nu, it satisfies these equations. On the other hand, it is clear that this is a tensor with two indices. So it actually, this is not a vector. It's a rank 2 tensor. So this tensor plays an important role in field theory, of course. It's called the energy momentum tensor. And it has, several properties that actually don't follow from its definition. So one property may look accidental is that if we raise or lower both indices, then this tensor turns out to be symmetric just by construction. So this comes as a surprise because the origin of these two indices is very different. This enumerates components in a four current vector, and this just labeled various directions in which we make our translations. But in the final formula, they enter in the symmetric way. Now, this gives us four conserved quantities. And what these quantities are? Well, let's just write down the corresponding conservation laws. We know that the charges, which I will denote by P nu, given by this equation, are conserved. So these are conserved charges. So let us write down explicitly what these charges are. And we start from P0. So then we should look at this formula. So both indices are 0 here. So the first term will give phi dot squared. The second term gives minus the Lagrangian density. In the Lagrangian density, OK, it's written over there. So you see that what we get is 1/2 phi dot squared plus 1/2 gradient phi squared plus 1/2 m squared phi squared. This is just the energy. Of the field. So you see that the conservation of energy is related to translational invariance in time directions. So if we took nu to be zero, and this originated from the Noether theorem when we applied for time translations. So therefore, energy conservation is a consequence of translation invariance in time. So we can equally well write down the vector components of this conserved charge. So they are actually very easy to write down. So this will be equal to minus. Let me see. So this should be equal to. Phi dot times the gradient I acting on phi. So what's the meaning of this conserved charges? Well, they are partners of the energy when we think of this index as a Lorentz index, right? So Lorentz transformations, of course, act on nu, and we can go from, so they, this object forms a four vector. And we know what is a four vector whose zero component is the energy. This is just the momentum four vector. So what these integrals describe, they describe the momentum of the field. So So momentum conservation is then related to translations in spatial directions. So let me conclude. What we achieved by what this Noether theorem tells us is that, first of all, we can write down any conservation law in the Lorentz invariant form. It's the best way to do it is just to write it in as a differential equation like that. And then, in principle, we can construct the total charge by integration over over some spatial region. Now, the Noether theorem gives us a constructive way to build these charges, so from symmetries. So if you know that the action has such and such symmetries, we just apply the Noether theorem and derive the conserved current from which we can get, conserved charges by integration. So this is a very useful tool because, it gives us a way to calculate the conserved quantities. And moreover, understanding what are the conservation laws associated with a given system, we only need to look at its symmetries. Let me stop here. If you have any questions, I'm ready to answer them. If not, then yes.
There is another symmetry in this field, which is the conservation of angular momentum, which is not very apparent from the Noether's theorem, right? Or does it come from the fact that the energy momentum tensor is conserved if you construct some three field tensor using that, sorry.
That's right. So, first of all, it also follows from the Noether theorem. If you apply it to rotations, then what you'll get is the angular momentum of the field. But then if you do the calculation, then it turns out that indeed the density of angular momentum is expressed in terms of
the
T-minimum. So you don't get any new quantity. Okay, then I'll stop here and I'll